Hey, this is Matt from Comixology. This week we have Jinx writer Jay Torres. Jay has written great all-ages titles ranging from Teen Titans Go, Power Lunch, and Batman the Brave and the Bold. Archie's Jinx follows Lil Jinx as she grows up and heads to high school. Friendships change, and she struggles with going to the school dance, trying out for the softball team, and her mother returning to the picture. As with other great Archie books, this book translates well to the modern day. Enjoy. The one thing that I really, you know, while reading Jinx, there was a really cool kind of realistic scenario where she tries out for softball and doesn't make it. And you had described the series as real, not ideal. Is that kind of like your guide while writing stories like this?
Yeah, that tagline, real, not ideal, was put together, or my editor, Susanna Roundtree, came up with that. So that's sort of our mantra, I guess you can say, as we create these stories. And as far as that particular plot point is concerned, I just decided to zig instead of zag. It just seemed so cliche that she would make it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still pretty early on in her story here. So I thought, you know, we're still at the process where we're kind of building her up.
Yeah.
And to build her up, we kind of have to bring her down first, right?
Yeah.
So that's why I decided to go that route. And it just fits the theme of the series.
It does. There was definitely zagging where, you know, her dad is not with his wife any longer. And then later on in the second volume, she comes back and she starts to play a role. But not only that, but she has a girlfriend, her mother. And there's a few issues in Archie Comics, you know, kind of recently, or I don't know if you want to call it the modern version of Archie, where there's some really real-life moments. There's a scene in the book where her dad talks about, you know, how they feel about her coming back into her life. But not only that, but having the mother have a girlfriend. And there's, like, a moment where the dad, you know, is upset and angry but realizes that she's happy now. And, it's like a deeper meaning where, you know, what must the dad must be? Like, what is he going through at this moment? And it speaks to the whole story, I think.
Yeah, there's something about Hap that I really like. He's kind of like the backbone of the Jinx series. Hap is Jinx's dad, of course. And I just wanted his reaction to feel real and authentic. And I kind of asked myself, what if I was in that situation and how would I react? And that's how I kind of played it. I mean, I'd be sad because obviously, you know, the woman you fell in love with, the woman you married, ended up, lying about her,
mm-hmm.
lying to herself mainly, about her sexual orientation, and then would only let her find out and become happy about herself and come out of the closet. So you'd be happy for her on that level. But at the same time, you're kind of, you know, you have to be sad too.
Yeah.
So that's sort of where I took that that characterization, just, you know, trying to put myself in his shoes and think, how would I react?
There was, I think it was the Archie Marries series, or the where he marries both Betty and Veronica in like a weird, you know, yeah. timeline shift, and I this stuck with me. I think at the end of the series, Archie has memories of both marriages, like even though they didn't happen. So he has like, I could be wrong, but I just remember distinctly Archie coming to grips with having lived full lives with both of these women, and then at the end, it's like they didn't happen. And I remember that being like so darkly poignant, to have to live his life knowing that. I just remember that stuck with me and it was hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, you have to wonder where this would all end up in real life. You know, a guy who's had these two girls sort of playing tug of war with his heart, and, you know, what would happen if that was, you know, for real?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jinx is a character from, you know, originally from 1947. So there's like years of history. If I was tasked with writing that, I'd probably just go in the corner and dry heave writing a character that old. But how did you approach that kind of history?
I kind of saw it as a blessing in disguise because, yeah, there's a whole canon there and classic strips that people fondly remember and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, it gave me a fully formed universe to work with. You know, it's not that different from freelancing for Marvel or DC. You know, you get to play in their sandbox with these toys that you don't really have to flesh out too much. You just tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And you try to do, whether you're doing plot driven or character driven stories, there's no need to explain, you know, Captain America.
Yeah.
It's just there. And same thing with Jinx pretty much. Of course, the challenge is, since we're aiming at a new audience, you kind of have to make it new reader friendly at the same time that you try to make it sort of a logical evolution from the original strips.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So we tried to be new reader friendly and at the same time make it follow what, you know, had come before in a logical way, in a fun way, in a way that would still attract older Archie fans.
Do you see like parallels between the fan base of, you know, your work on Teen Titans Go versus your Archie work? Because they seem kind of, you know, geared towards people that are just looking for great stories that can jump in. But I'm curious what the fan bases are like compared to each other.
Well, it's tough. There's definitely a subset of comic book readers who will read almost anything that I write.
Hmm.
You know, those guys are terrific. They just support my work, and you know, this is going to sound a little self-serving, but you know, they like good comics. They'll read any genre, any any publisher, etc. Right? But I find that I do have these kind of separated segments or separated audiences that almost at times know nothing of each other. So, for example, with the Teen Titans Go example that you brought up, you know, I wrote that series for about 5 years or so. And there's still a pretty hardcore following for that series.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're still downloading it on Comixology. I see them at cons, etc. And then the inevitable question comes up, hey, what else are you working on? And I'll mention the stuff I'm doing for Archie, and they have no idea. They had no idea.
Hmm.
And the reverse happens. You know, the Archie guys that come up, they're actually mostly young women and girls.
Yeah.
Who don't know anything about the Teen Titans Go stuff or any of the stuff I've done for Oni. So it's sort of an interesting, it's neat that I have these kind of, you know, pockets of different readerships and audiences, but at the same time, it's a little frustrating that we can't somehow bring them all together and have everybody buy everything, you know?
Right. Yeah. We need to merge the two into one big happy family.
But the thing I find though is also because I do a lot of younger reader stuff, if the kids continue to read comics into their teens or into college, they'll come around and find, say they read Teen Titans Go, you know, whatever it was, 6, 7, 8 years ago. And they were in their early teens. Now they're, you know, late teens, college years. They're going back and picking up the stuff I did for Wonder Woman and Legends of the Dark Knight or whatever, or the Oni stuff that I did. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting. It makes you feel old, but it's nice that they kind of grow up and they come back and look for your other work.
Yeah. Do you now, my next question is, you do a lot of those easy access, all ages stories that are great to pick up. Do you get more enjoyment out of that? You know, do you have more, do you find that easier for you? Or do you sometimes get the urge to do like a darker themed story?
Actually, all of the above. I do find it easier and I enjoy it more. You know, writing for that sort of general audience or all ages audience, or what my friend Scott calls the Pixar principle, you know,
mm-hmm.
I just like, it's just kind of, I guess you can say it's my wheelhouse. And I just enjoy doing that kind of comic book more. But every now and then, especially if I've been doing something for quite a while, like back to the Teen Titans Go thing, I do get the itch to do something, you know, more mature or in a different genre. So like in the last year or so, you know, I've been working on Jinx and another series with Faith Aaron Hicks called Bigfoot Boy, both of which are for younger readers, but I also did something for Creepy at Dark Horse. And I was working, and I'm developing some other more mature superhero stuff. So, yeah, you know, I like doing the younger stuff, but every now and then I do get the itch to sort of just step outside of that.
I would think, too, being a father, maybe there's like a piece of your mind where I want my kids to read this at a really young age and appreciate it too, maybe more so than certain genres or subgenres.
Yeah, there's that. But even before I was a dad, I was interested in writing all ages type comics, and sure, I had nephews and nieces and stuff, but I don't know. It's just something, you know, it's kind of like why does Dr. Seuss, you know, write kids' books, or mm-hmm. what does Disney aim for the general audience? It's just, I guess, something that comes naturally or feels right for me. Mm.
I was talking with my buddies about, you know, books that are great for to get younger kids into comics. And I always think back of like what my first comic was when I was like 8 or 9. And they're like totally not really all ages books. They're like me picking up X-Men on like a Pathmark newsstand shelf. You know, it's like that maybe like don't even feel appropriate. But it's interesting that some kids get into them with, you know, digest sized books or like Sonic. But like a certain generation, maybe my generation, got in on those kind of X-Men 1990s comics. It's weird.
Yeah, it's true, though. You're right. It's a different world, because when I was younger, I could go get new Teen Titans or X-Men at the corner store. And they certainly weren't, you wouldn't call them, you know, for mature readers, but there was certainly a certain level of violence and, I guess, sexuality that you don't find in, say, you know, a Disney comic book or an Archie comic book for that matter. Mm-hmm. But you know, back then we didn't have seatbelts and right. laws for minors. So I'm guessing it's an okay thing that we're kind of sanitizing things a little bit, or at least letting kids be kids longer.
Yeah.
Sanitizing was totally the wrong word there, but, but I think, you know what I mean? You know, I think it's, you know, there's certain things that, we used to be able to do and used to be able to discover uh-huh. 10, 20 years ago that we're definitely better about these days.
It was funny. I took my wife and son, we went to C2E2, and it was like the first plane ride trip or everything with our 2.5-year-old. And then we like sat down right before we left and we're like, oh man, what do we do with a taxi cab? And we had like no idea what the state law was. We had no idea. We'd never even done it before. So we had to lug like a car seat around. It was like, and like, I was like thinking in my head, I didn't want to try and sound old, but like back in my day, you know, dad's lap and just hope for the best.
Oh, and you know, it's funny because you're mentioning traveling with kids and whatever, but so that those are the laws here. My wife is Korean. We visited Korea and they don't care. The kid can sit on your lap, sit on each other's lap in the car. So my kids who are 5 and 2 are kind of freaking out because they know this is not
normal
for them. Yeah. And they're kind of nervous because you're sitting on mom's lap in the back of a car, which they've never experienced before. So yeah, it's just such a different world.
What do you read yourself? Like, what do you read in your free time?
Oh, a lot. But recently, you guys had that Superman sale that dropped a couple days ago.
Yeah.
And I don't know, there's something in the air with the Superman thing. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But I downloaded a bunch of Byrne stuff, like the Man of Steel stuff and the rebooted Superman series that he did.
Yeah.
So those were favorites, you know, when I was a teenager. So I'm rereading and revisiting all that stuff, and it's as good and as fun as it used to be.
There was one, I started reading that and it blew my mind. There was like a weird Lex Luthor B story in one issue where he went to a diner.
Oh, I know exactly the one you're talking about.
And he just makes a proposition to this waitress.
Yes.
And
yes.
He goes out and waits in his car and waits for a decision. But before she can, he leaves. So he puts her through this dramatic, stressful situation and then just leaves. And it literally blew me away.
Machiavellian. That's what it is.
Oh, you know, man.
Psychological torture.
And I was annoyed but like so thankful that, you know, reading an era of comics that I'm totally not familiar with, and maybe I have preconceived notions of what 80s comics were like, but that was like something that I never read before, even in today's comics.
Well, it was brilliant. I mean, it's like, you know, how to write a character 101, and it was like a short, like you said, I think it was 6 pages or 8 pages.
Yeah.
If that, and right there, you know, you have everything you need to know about Lex Luthor.
Yeah, that's like, you just ship that around in comic shops, and that's it. That's all you need.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's a testament to Byrne's storytelling that both of us remember it so well to this day. It still, you know, gnaws at our soul.
Well, Jay, I appreciate you coming on. I really enjoyed Jinx, and it's great, easy access, it's fun, and I hope people check it out.
Thanks for having me on.